Welcome to the Living Waters Church podcast.
We're in a new series starting this week and going into 2 weeks from now. Next week, of course, Doug said is Remembrance Day, and so we're doing a different service with that. But this week and 2 weeks from now, we're in a series called Christians and Culture. It's not so new, but to some of you it might be, because we're trying to engage with this series different times throughout the year. We decided not to just tackle this incredibly huge part of our lives, trying to understand how to follow Jesus in this culture in just a month. We're sort of spreading it out throughout the year and looking at different parts of it. Like, sometimes when we think about culture, we think about different places and different peoples with kind of diverse, exciting, colorful cultures. And we don't think about the fact that we live in a culture, that we have norms, we live certain ways, we celebrate certain ways, we speak certain languages, we dress certain ways, we express ourselves in particular fashion. And we need to remember that we live in a culture, and we live in a culture that's far removed from the culture that Jesus lived in and Jesus taught in and Jesus died in and rose from the dead in, and his followers as well. We live in a different place in the planet. We live at a different time, 2,000 years later. And so Christians and Culture is about trying to understand our ancient faith and the words of Jesus and the words of his followers as we find in the scriptures and live faithfully with them in the culture that we find ourselves in today. A culture that looks very, very different than the culture back then, but is still colorful. It's still filled with all kinds of interesting things and hurdles and potential traps, but beautiful possibilities as well. And so that's why we're in Christians and Culture. This week and 2 weeks from now, we're looking at eyes and ears and mouth and hands. Eyes and ears in what we take in, what comes at us, the onslaught of culture. Today, many of us would experience through popular culture, entertainment, media, technology, social media, that realm, eyes and ears, music even. And then 2 weeks from now, we're going to look at mouth and hands. So what we take in and what we contribute to, what we put out there, because we no longer simply influence people in our homes or people that we go to school with or work with or call up on the phone. We can now influence each other and the world in an incredibly quick way with anything that we want at any point in time. And so what does it mean to be a Christian and live in a time like that? How do we follow Jesus well with those kinds of abilities and opportunities in our hands? I think that in order for us to have a meaningful discussion about what we take in and what we put out, we need to consider the unparalleled time that we live in today. Really, no generation in human history has come close to experiencing the kind of technological advancements or information made available by those who took steps forward in the previous century. We're living in a special time. The very first radio broadcast was made in 1906. The very first program. It was made on Christmas Eve. A guy stood there with a violin and played O Holy Night. And then they read some of the Bible. The very first broadcast of moving images on what we would probably consider today to be the world's worst television was made in 1925. By a Scottish inventor. If 1925 sounds like a long time ago, it wasn't. Less than 100 years ago. And it wasn't until the mid-1980s that North America and Europe even began to connect via what we understand today to be the internet. They had their own networking connections on different continents, and in the mid-80s, they finally connected and were able to communicate, share, etc. Thailand gained global internet connection in 1992, and Uganda was the first African country to get the internet via satellite in 1995. Online dating websites will tell you, I've heard. That one in three relationships begin online. Whether that stat is true or not, it's probably close. And think about this area of the world. 100 years ago, 2 out of 3 relationships began with somebody saying, you have to marry that guy. So we're moving fast, moving very fast. And if tomorrow we were denied the internet or half the technology that we utilize, or we're cut off from the media outlets that we love to engage ourselves in, save books, we probably wouldn't know up from down, right? We could look at stat after stat, how many hours a week the North American teenager spends online, the average adult spends watching television a day. Stat from 2010 that I stumbled across that said that 35 hours of video content is being uploaded to YouTube every 60 seconds. 35 hours every 60 seconds. That was 2010, and I dare to say it's probably more now. Every minute, 35 hours. We could look at how much time a week the average stay-at-home mom spends on Facebook, and by the way, it's a lot, judging by the 1,300 pictures you put up of your kid eating cake this week. And we love it. We love your child. It's a lot. So we could throw around all kinds of stats, but we already know, we're pretty aware that we live in a media, technology, information-drenched culture, right? It's part of our lives for most of us. And we're absorbing a lot of it. We are absorbing a lot of it. So how do we be Christians in the 21st century? How do we live in a time like this? What does Jesus have to say about any of this? What do the scriptures have to say about any of this? So far removed, thousands of years removed, thousands of miles removed. What does our faith, our holy book have to say about living in a time like this? Does Jesus have any kind of authority when it comes to this area? You can open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 6. We're going to be in the Sermon on the Mount today. So if you're unfamiliar with the Sermon on the Mount, it's this famous group of teachings that Jesus gives, all grouped together for us by Matthew. And Jesus is seated and he's teaching thousands of people, all kinds of people, old people, young people, rich people, poor people. He's teaching Roman soldiers. He's teaching religious elite. He's teaching sick. He's teaching the poor, all kinds of people. From all over the place, diverse crowd, hugely diverse crowd gathered before him. And at one point, as he's teaching, Jesus shares with his listeners what we call today to the Lord's Prayer, showing his followers what communion with God is supposed to look like. And one of the main emphases of the prayer is to help the one praying remember to align themselves with God and his kingdom rather than their own kingdoms. We see this all through the book of Matthew. So verse 9, we see that only God our Father in heaven is holy, worthy of praise, deserving of recognition. He is above all things. Verse 10, we align ourselves with God and his ways, his kingdom. We ask that we see what is right and pure and good and of God on earth as it is seen in heaven. God, let your perfect existence be a part of our existence. Verse 11 and 12, we remember that God is above all. He is holy. He's the only one who can truly provide for our physical needs. He's also the only one who can truly provide for our spiritual needs. And as he has provided and afforded us forgiveness and grace, we learn as his followers to extend that same forgiveness and grace to other people. And the prayer continues. This is the Lord's Prayer. It would then seem that Jesus curiously tosses in some random teaching about fasting. If we look carefully, we see that he's emphasizing correct perspective. He's teaching the people not to be hypocrites. Fasting, Jesus says, is not about you and somebody else. It's not about you and how you look to other people. Fasting is about you and God. And saying to yourself in a moment, in denying food, saying, even my physical sustenance, even what I need to live, I'm putting aside, God, to remember that you are central in my life. Jesus continues, and he gets really interesting at this point, because he goes from prayer to fasting, and then he starts talking about money. He says this in verse 19 of chapter 6, Matthew. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. So he's teaching his followers to be focused on God, his ways and his kingdom, not their own. Align yourself with God. That's the way of the kingdom. He does this in part through teaching on money. Money won't last. Physical matter isn't eternal. It's not bad. Jesus never says money is bad. But it's not where life's ultimate focus should be. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, this is an interesting phrase from Jesus. It's a famous phrase today. But Jesus understands that humans only have so much attention, time, energy, and focus, and it will end up in one place or another. For Jesus, the heart means our emotions, our will, our desire, even our reason, our decision-making. So Jesus says, if you put your money, you put your focus on money and things, if you treasure those things, that's where your heart's going to be. That's where your will is going to be. That's where your desire is going to be. That's where your emotions are going to be wrapped up. That's where your reason will be. We're beginning to get closer to connecting some dots. Then Jesus talks about lamps and eyes and your body, and it all gets thoroughly metaphorical and a little bit confusing sometimes. But essentially, he's saying that the eye is like the heart. And you will have unclear vision if you are trying to focus on two things at once. You have something in focus and something in your peripheral. I'm looking at Josh's toque, but I can see Doug's mustache. But I'm focused on the toque. You can focus really only on one thing. And Jesus says what you pay most attention to, what your heart is set on, what your eye is focused on, that will fill your being. It will fill your being. And so he concludes by saying that no one can serve two masters. Now, this language isn't as accessible to us as it was for the first century crowds. If you were a slave and you had a master, your whole life was devoted to a master. Your whole life's goal, it wasn't just that you were employed, your whole life's goal was to improve their way of life. Everything you did needed to fall in line with the wills, the desires, the plans, the purposes of your master. And there was no such thing as a slave that had two masters. It didn't make sense. Because how could they be entirely dedicated to one and entirely dedicated to another? Not possible. Jesus says, you can't do it. Human beings, according to Jesus, have a limited amount of time, energy, and focus. You can't serve God and money. You're going to fall in love with one. Which is better, the temporal or the eternal? So through his teachings on prayer and through the expression of fasting, through the end goal of life, do we hoard? Do we center our lives around getting, or do we center our lives around a giving God? And then flowing into teaching on worry and anxiety, which is connected to money, by the way. We won't go into it. We see a number of themes in this teaching. Brilliant themes. Jesus was a fantastic teacher. But one of the main themes that we see is focus and intention. Focus and intention. Jesus says that his listeners need to focus on one thing. And where they focus on, that's where they will end up. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. where your time or your energy, your focus is, that's what's going to fill your being. What comes through your eye, what comes through your heart, it's going to be a core part of who you are. And so we could sum it up this way, especially the passage about money. What you consume will consume you. What you consume will consume you. What you're focused on, what you're wrapped up with, what you're engaged with, what you're oriented around, what you consume will consume you. And so the principle of the teaching might then also stand if we substitute money for anything else save God. You cannot serve God and greed. You cannot serve God and sexual gratification. You cannot serve God and ambition. You cannot serve God and caring about what others think of you. And in a time, in a culture where I wonder if information and entertainment are valued more highly than wealth and accumulation, I wonder if we could say that you cannot serve God and media. You cannot serve God and technology, popular culture, or entertainment. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What you consume will consume you. So the big question is, of course, in considering this teaching from Jesus, what are we consuming? What is filling our lives? What are we oriented around? Now, again, it's not that money or sex or media are bad inherently. Jesus never says this. But these things are to live on the periphery of life. They're not to be the central focus, consuming all of our time, all of our energy. We're not to be enslaved or dominated by these things. They're not to be our master. As Jesus spoke to his people in the Old Testament, and he gave them guidelines, a gift of grace. You're to have no other God before me. No other God before me. Humans have a higher purpose. Have a higher purpose. To be involved in better activities. Again, these things are not evil. But they're not to be central. So we must ask, what are we consuming? What are we aligning ourselves with? What are we busying ourselves with? What are we filling ourselves with? Recently, I grew up not very conscious of what I ate. I just ate. I didn't really learn to read labels. And as I'm nearing the precipice that is 30, no offense, I have noticed physically that I cannot do what I used to do. Right? I can't live that way. It's not body's responding differently. I can't just eat whatever I want and kind of go from there. It's not possible. And so I've started just even reading labels. It's a bit embarrassing because I know we live on the West Coast and everyone's all healthy and stuff. And I grew up in an English home and it was like batter for lunch, batter for breakfast, batter for dinner. So I've just started reading labels, you know, and the only thing I've really learned to read, I don't know really anything about any of it. The only thing I've learned to read is about the calories. And so it's really kind of embarrassing. And so I look and, oh, that's a lot of calories, you know, and this is even worse. Even recently, I used to read the calories and be like, oh, yeah, there's 100 calories in this jar. Well, that's not bad. And I realized that, oh, per tablespoon, that's a problem. And so I've tried to be aware of that, you know, but like what we take in physically, what we take in through our eyes and our ears, some of us have absolutely no filter. We've got no filter. It's just coming at us constantly. This barrage, this onslaught of media, technology, entertainment is just coming at us. And we're like, sure. Yeah, more. Screen addiction, music addiction, television addiction, movie addiction, you know, social media addiction. We're just taking it constantly, going, yep, with absolutely no consideration of how it's affecting us. And the reality is, according to Jesus, where your heart is, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It's gonna do something. It's not saying that all the problems in your life are because you watch too much television. Not true. Problems in your life because you're a sinner and you need Jesus, right? But it does something. And sometimes we go, oh, it's probably not affecting me. It probably is affecting you. I mean, and some of us, you know, we're more sensitive to certain things than others of us. For some of us in the room, it would be okay for us to eat what's in this jar. Others of us are highly sensitive to what's in this jar, perhaps even allergic, and it's death for us. And we need to be aware of that, of how we're wired, how we're built, what our experiences have been in the past. And maybe it's even as simple as going, it's probably okay for me to have a tablespoon or you know, have a few times a week, have some of this peanut butter on my toast, and that's great. But if I was to sit down and eat one of these every single day, I'd be in trouble fast, right? I'd be in trouble. Oh, we need to consider that. Now, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also, where your will, where your emotions. And some are like, why am I making the decisions that I'm making? Why am I feeling the way that I'm feeling? Why am I over here one day and over here the next day? Have you considered what you're taking in all the time? It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of stuff. Now, at this point, it'd be very easy for us to start drawing lines and making rules, right? Because this is the natural sort of fleshly response. Okay, so I'm going to do this and this, and now it's all going to be solved. Draw lines and make rules. And we'd say that, okay, we need to only have this much and of this kind. This much of this stuff and of this kind, approved by this group of people on this website, right? We want to move towards that, but we don't live as Christians under rules and regulations. We live in the freedom of relationship with Jesus. And we must each ask within that relationship, what am I consuming? What am I consuming? What am I filling my eye with? Where is my treasure and therefore my heart? That question that we each must ask within the relationship of Jesus must morph into another question if we are to truly follow Jesus and do what he has called us to do. To not just be in right, aligned relationship with him, but to be who he wants us to be in the world. And so the question must transform. If we're to truly follow Jesus, we must begin to ask not just what am I consuming, but why am I consuming? Why am I consuming? I want us to listen to a song together, and it's by a Canadian artist. She's a great artist. She's a brilliant musician. She actually grew up around here and went to UVic, I believe. She's doing really well. Her latest album was just released in September, I believe. And this is the first song on her album.
You are off kilter with me. Don't you know it's every other day of the week? You're in my feet. These days I'm running to escape. Drenching my red, soaking my mistakes. My mistakes. Is there any love left for me? Is there any love left for me? That dark sky, yeah, it's so big. Isn't anybody wondering? Isn't anybody questioning what this all is? As I age,
age, it sinks deeper in. This life is temporary, it's all gonna end. This is all gonna end. It's just a little love that I need. 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 There's an elephant in this room.
If we begin to draw lines and make rules for each other, if we begin to cut ourselves off from what's coming in, maybe we miss Hannah's song. Next song on her album is about how she's been so hurt and broken that she hopes that the person that hurt and broke her will feel the same kind of rejection that she's felt. By closing our eyes and our ears, by shutting ourselves off, we're missing blatant cries from our culture. Show me the road. Like, they're asking for it. Literally, in their songs they released in September. These are cutting-edge Canadian artists, American artists, Western artists who are going, I have no clue. I have no clue about what I'm doing with my life. And I need somebody to show me. And for years we went, no, sorry, you don't have a Christian label on your album, so forget about you. God, forgive us. We must ask, what are we consuming? Yes, we must ask that. What are we consuming? Be aware of it and be vigilant. Absolutely. But we have to ask, why are we consuming? Can we listen and look and study so that we can offer the Hannahs of the world what they're desperately asking for and be the church that they need us to be? If we listen carefully, we might actually learn something. And this is perhaps what Jesus was praying for us in John 17. Jesus prayed for us. And we say that God is with us, and we understand that, and we're trying to work that out in our own lives, of course. But the historical Jesus, 2,000 years ago, was praying before he went to the cross. He was praying for his disciples who were with him, but he also prayed for everybody who believed in their words. That would be you and me. That's us. Jesus prayed for you and me. And at one point in his prayer, at the end of his life, he prays, I do not ask that you take them, Christians, out of the world, but keep them from the evil one. Don't take them out of the world, Father, but keep them from the evil one. Now, this would mean keep them from Satan, the evil one, the tempter, the liar, the one who's going to try and steal, kill, and destroy. But it's also translated, keep them from evil. Keep them from doing evil themselves. And so Jesus prays that we would be kept in and learn to live within the tension of culture, of following him and yet finding ourselves in a place, in a time, in a context that's shady. He prays for that tension. Keep them where they need to be, sent to the world as I'm sent to the world. Getting messy as I've gotten messy, getting my hands in the dirt as I've got my hands in the dirt. But keep them from evil. But keep them blameless. Sanctify them in your truth. Make them holy in the midst of that. So, when we are surrounded by everything from CBC News to the good news of the kingdom of heaven, from Facebook to fasting, from Call of Duty to Call Me Maybe. I could have played that song. From The Walking Dead to It's a Wonderful Life. Jesus prays that we would be able to not be removed from the darkness, but to stay there bearing the light. That we would not be consumed by the darkness, but be filled with the light, bringing hope to the people who need it. You are in the best place that you need to be. God has put you there. God's exposed you to what you need to be exposed to. God has put the people in your life that he wants in your life. But he needs your attention first. And he has something for you to do with it. Doug, I wonder if you would come and pray, maybe to close our service this morning.
Your word is powerful, Lord. And sometimes we see it, but we miss the mark of the word for our hearts and our spirits. And I feel today that you have just been reminding us right from the very beginning of this service that we are to remember who you are, and that our hearts need to be first placed in your hands, and that is the grid from which we need to walk this world. To be in this place of culture that we are surrounded in and sometimes overwhelmed by and sometimes very much participants in, and to figure that out well, Lord, while being the light in darkness. I pray for all of us, Lord, that you would give us wisdom in these things. Help us, Father, to find the right tension in our lives, not to be consumed by a world, but to be able to walk in it well, as you did, Jesus, to be life and to be love and to be hope and to be freedom. God, we totally recognize we need your help. And we also recognize today that in order for us to move well, you need to be our first love. That's where it starts. So help us in these things, Lord, I pray. And I pray today that we would leave encouraged and challenged, ready for the tomorrow that you have for us. And God, help us today to live it well. In your name, we pray with great faith. Amen. Amen. God bless you, everybody. Have an awesome Sunday.